Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Well, good evening, my brothers and my sisters, and welcome once again to another series here on the PRF table. This is one of your hosts, Dr. Nate Dunlap. Matter of fact, let me take that back. I'm not even hosting tonight. Tonight we have somebody from our team that is going to be hosting tonight's series. Her name is Laura Bondurant, and we're going to bring her on in just a moment. And also with us tonight, we have a special guest. I'll tell everybody this is a returning guest from last year, if I'm not mistaken. Dr. Karay Lynn Gordon out of the Bronx, New York. She is a powerhouse. Last year when she was with us, she was not Dr. Gordon. This year she is Dr. Gordon. So she has a lot more education than she did last year. We're excited about tonight's theme, not just tonight's theme, but we're excited about this monthly series. You know, every February has been tradition as we've gone about that particular month of Black History Month, to make sure they were honoring and uplifting our Black history. And I say our Black history because I'm Black, and that doesn't mean everybody with PRF is Black, but I can say that from my context. It's important. It's a time of the year that we engage in a whole bunch of conversations, but I think what you're going to get this month and in this series of February 2018 is a whole different perspective, and you're going to be challenged. You may get a little upset. You may get a little bit mad. It's okay. So we got 28 minutes just to get it in, and we'll continue whatever we can't continue on tonight's show throughout the week on our website or on our Facebook page. On Facebook, we are located at PRF Institute. PRF is Possessions, Resources, and Finances. Or you can catch up and follow us on our website, prfministry.org. If you're listening to us online, you can want to jump into the conversation. As always, the number is 347-215-7934. So now, without further ado, we are going to bring in Laura Bondurant and just let Laura Bondurant just take over and run this show. And Dr. Dunlap is going to sit back in the cut for 4 weeks almost. God bless you. Laura, good evening to you.
Well, good evening. Thank you. It's so good to be here. And what a great topic tonight, economics and education, and I am so glad to have Dr. Gordon on, and I really hope to learn from you, Dr. Gordon, tonight. I know this is an area of expertise for you, and I guess I'd really like to start out tonight if you could just share a little bit about yourself and the education you did get this last year.
Well, good evening. Thank you, Laura, and thank you, Dr. Dunlap, for that introduction, and thank you for having me back on the show. And I am pleased that, you know, that last year I was on the show, and we had some dynamic conversations around economics and race and how it relates to race. And to be back this year is a wonderful, it's an honor to be back with you all here at the PRF round table. I did receive a doctorate in education. I currently work with in New York City with a portfolio of schools, and so that education and, you know, our topic this evening makes me even more passionate about this topic.
Excellent. So I guess let's dive in then, if it's okay. I would just love to ask you a few questions in regards to what does it mean for your portfolio of schools, what you do, and how do you see, you know, the correlation between economics and education? What is it that you're seeing?
Well, you know, I think the bigger, broader issue, Laura, is that, you know, we tend to talk a lot about racial issues. And happy Black History Month to everyone, you know, because it is important that we acknowledge and you know, like Dr. Dunlap alluded to, you know, Black History Month should be less about or just as much about celebrating with folks who are not Black as it is with for folks who are Black to celebrate, right? We should all celebrate, embrace the history that, you know, that Blacks have contributed to America. And we have a lot of racial issues in this country. No one's denying that. But what we have and what's even more evident, and especially under this administration, is we have a poverty issue, right? And we have an attack on poor people. Now, because we have a majority, and there is a large majority of people of color who also are in that poverty category, it a lot of times looks as the racial issue is the pejorative issue, when a lot of times it really is an underlying issue of the poverty issue. What do I mean by that? You know, I work and I see that we right now we are spending a lot of dollars in education. I worked. I won't even talk about my present for you know for all of the confidentiality agreements. I won't talk about my present employment. I'll talk about a past employment. I worked in a inner city, urban school district where right outside of New York City in New Jersey, I won't say which district, but the most funded district in New Jersey, so it's pretty easy to figure that one out, where the budget for that school district was $1 billion. $1 billion, not $1 million, $1 billion. $1 billion, and to tell you the truth, that district isn't even as big as one of our boroughs here in New York City, right? And it's got a $1 billion budget. And yet you walk into those schools, and the majority of those schools, so when they decided to move over the testing in that school district to a computer platform and the district didn't even have enough broadband. They're still sharing computers. Now, this is a district where Mark Zuckerberg had donated $100 million for a $100 million match. And yet, we still don't have, or there still is not, ample computers for students to test in that district. You have to test A and B. So this class tests on Monday, and this class tests on Monday afternoon, and then this grade tests on Tuesday because you have to share computer cards. Now, in the district right across the water, they have all the technology that they need. They have everything that they need. And why I say it's more of an economic issue than a racial issue is because when you think about the amount of money that's being spent in that district to almost not educate students, you have to think about who then gets hurt in the long run. You know, mm-hmm. You can't afford to really, we have to think back about the purpose of education. And can we afford to really educate all the students inside that district? You know, I want to let you go back and bring it back here.
I think you're right that there's so much money, but I am Do you see a correlation? Maybe it's my more of a question. Do you see, however, is there, in your view, a correlation, though, between the race and the economic and education piece? And my question comes, just looking at statistics now. I'm down in Georgia, so that's kind of where I spent more looking. But where I see that, say, 54% of children enrolled down here that have been directed to special education or different programs are predominantly African American or minority students, and often come from, povertized situations. But so I see, just looking statistically, some possible steering, some, dealing with poverty, but that they're, I often see that they go together at some level. So I'm just curious what your take on that, and is it simply an economic issue in your eyes?
Well, I think part of the design too, right? Okay, let's shift up the road a little. Let's go to West Virginia, because to me, West Virginia this year has shown me the most glaring example of where a lot of what we deal with is about economics, and I think more than race, right? So in West Virginia, we know that the pharmaceutical companies targeted this city. Now, this is not a city where there's a majority of people of color. This is a majority of poor people, poor white folks. And so they targeted this area to send almost, I think it was like, millions of pills to now have a population of people who are addicted to heroin. Their school system, their health system, every system in West Virginia, and I listened, because the mayor of West Virginia has a class action lawsuit out against the pharmaceutical companies, every system has been affected by the attack, the deliberate targeting of the people of West Virginia. These are not people of color. But here was a group of people that could be targeted to seriously hurt, kill, annihilate a group of people where the pharmaceutical companies could make a profit. And after they've now poisoned this community, now the biggest thing, after you've gotten all of these people hooked on these drugs, now there's the antidote, which is also extremely profitable. And so now in schools in West Virginia and so forth, you have them now teaching parents how to use the antidote and teaching parents what to do and to give this shot to their young people if they overdose. Tell me where race comes into that picture, Laura. Because if it was a town and it was another part of Virginia that was majority black, we would say this is a racial issue, that they targeted black people, that they are targeting minorities, right? But if we look deeper and we look at some of these other areas in Idaho, where there's been for a long time a methamphetamine problem, where we still have low test scores, where we still have under-resourced schools, but a lot of times we don't hear what's going on in a lot of these really poor rural white communities. And because the system is designed for us to hate one another, because if poor people actually got together, we might actually be able to do something, the media tends to have us speak in terms of race. And again, I want to say to anyone who is listening, I'm not denying that we don't have racial issues in this country. I'm saying that the underlying root cause of many of the racial issues is more about money than it is about race.
Agree. I mean, I think definitely we can agree, or I can agree with on that. How does then the economic, in both of your situations, New Jersey and West Virginia and Idaho, like you said, in those situations, you know, you're seeing the poverty levels and the different things that are happening that, of course, affect, you know, education and funding. And so what correlation then do you see between, again, you know, economics and education as far as, okay, if these are lower economic areas, school systems, et cetera, they're not having the same funding, they don't have the same, you know, computers, the different things that other schools may have. How does that affect the economic outcome of that generation who's going through school and, you know, furthering their education and economics overall for them?
Well, if you don't get the education you need, it's going to keep people in a certain place. And
correct,
there's a deliberate attempt to keep certain people in a certain place because we want to have this 1% with all the wealth and the rest of us kind of serve that 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, again, if we think about Brown versus Board of Education, right, which became a landmark case. It was never about Brown v. Board of Ed was never an issue, or let me not say it was never. The real issue in Brown versus Board of Education was separate but equal. And so what we did was we attacked the separate, and we still have not fixed the equal. Right? And so we kind of band-aided the separate. And then people kind of agreed with that. And it became about Ms. Brown who sending in the troops to make sure that she went into school and allowing children of color to go to white schools and all that went with that. And we never talked about the economics. We never addressed the economics, which was to make sure that the schools had equal dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are years later, you know, Brown v. Board of Ed was 1954. We're now at 2018, and our schools are still under-resourced, even with $1 billion budgets, which was my example of in New Jersey. It's not that the money is not there. It's just that the money doesn't go to support the education of students. The money is there.
Go ahead. I was going to ask, where do you see that money goes? If the money's there, why is it not going to the education of students?
Well, that's a great question, Laura. Why? That's a million dollar question. Right? How does it have a $1 billion budget and yet you have schools that don't have computers? How is it that you have a billion dollar budget and you don't have enough broadband to make sure that every student can get online in your district, in a small district? Because really, comparatively, it's really a small district. You know, we feed a lot do you know that originally the superintendent position was created so that white males could have a job and could participate in the education system. That's a fact, right? And so that we know that, and I don't want anyone to think that I'm anti-union, but a lot of times that the conversations that happen around schools, it's disheartening to really sit in a room and to know that there are more conversations and more meetings that take place about unions and about workers and about all of the different areas where the funding for schools go, and so little conversation around academic outcomes and academic success, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so every day, I'm privy or not real privy, but to budgets where you see that this huge initiative with millions and millions of dollars being poured into budgets, and these budgets serve everything and everyone but students, right?
So in a sense, it seems these budgets go to salaries and those types of things, is that?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. You know, I could take you and we think only in salaries, but we have, you know, curriculum, and every year we buy curriculum. And you get a superintendent and they want to use this curriculum, and the next superintendent comes and wants to use somebody else's curriculum. And we buy paper and we buy pencils and we buy more books and books and books, and you'll have schools and we'll talk about how many books we don't have. We're still buying books when most of the suburban communities are download, you know, and most of their students at this point have tablets. And so you'll go into the urban districts and we're still buying books. And sometimes at some point somebody has to say, well, why are we still buying books?
And so what to you, what, you know, you mentioned, okay, so you go into the urban districts and there's a difference. What, where, who makes those, in a sense, why is the decision or why is not the trend move back and forth more broadly? Maybe that's what I'm asking. Such as, you know, the computers, the downloading, the you know, those types of things. And is that an economic piece or an information?
Well, it's a continuous cycle, right? Uh-huh. And again, I'm not excluding the racial problems that we have. I'm not excluding the fact that we don't have race issues. But I really feel that if we're ever to move past some of what we've experienced as people of color and poor people everywhere, that we need to begin to think more economically minded and less about color, right? And so when you continue a cycle, like we just have a continuum, right? And so students don't get educated, that leads to poor, leads to poor education, leads to low earnings, which keeps people in this kind of cycle where they never really, you know, they're constantly at a survival place and they never really get to actualize, right? So you keep people on that lowest rung of society and that lowest rung of just they're always in survival mode and you never really elevate. They never get to go up that ladder to a self-actualization. And so this is an issue, and because people don't have the education, then we have parents who don't have the education and the understanding that they then need to be involved in their child's school, that don't have the confidence, because a lot of it is then, if I'm miseducated, I don't have the confidence to fight a system, and I believe that this system is too big for me to tackle. And keep a people oppressed through our education, and we keep people oppressed because if they're not oppressed, then they could take the power from the powerful, wealthy elite.
Yeah, and boy, so that is a whole topic right there.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazingly, time is flying by this evening. Dr. Gordon, if you could, I mean, you have such incredible information, so much knowledge on this. If you could leave us with a last thought before we turn this back over to Dr. Dunlap, just regarding economics and education, what would you like to leave us with? Maybe some food for thought.
Well, you know, I'm going to leave us with a quote that I just think is just so always appropriate. It is a quote that a professor at City College instilled into me very, very young, at a very, very young age, when I attended my first child development, which she said we should never put our children in daycare centers. And so as a young mother, I was a student and a young mother on the campus of City College, and she said to us at that point that there's nothing more educational than politics and nothing more political than education. And truly, that quote has really stuck with me over the last 25 years, you know, working with inside and along with school systems, that, you know, that there is nothing more political than education. And we know that politics and economics go hand in hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if we, you know, ever want to change the trajectory of our country, of the poor in this country, of our economics, of how wealth is distributed, it has to start with our educational systems. That's the only way we're going to begin to give people an opportunity to be self-sufficient, to reach a level of self-actualization, to feel some self-worth, is through them being properly educated and being able to take care of themselves and take care of their families.
Amen. That is, I hope that over the next 3 weeks that we can just continue at different levels to talk that through, because nothing more political than education, and I think we have a week on that. So I look forward to exploring this even more, and I thank you so much for your insight and your time. And Dr. Dunlap, would love to turn this back over to you.
I thank you, Laura.
Thank you. Dr. Gordon, once again, thank you for being with us. I believe that our listeners have truly enjoyed the dialogue that has come forth on today. And so we just look forward to next week as we deal with equality. And then the week after that, as we deal with politics. And then on the fourth Thursday of this month, we're going to deal with reconciliation. Because we can talk about education, we can talk about politics, we can talk about equality. However, because there have been so many people that have been broken, shattered, shamed, disgraced, left behind, there's a need for reconciliation. And so we're grateful for you being with us on this month's series. And we just want to just thank you once again for being with us. Let me say, as a housekeeping note.
Thank you so
go
much.
Ahead.
No, I'm Amen. Sorry. I just Amen. Wanted to say I thank you so much for inviting me to the PRF table. And these are really important topics. And this is a powerful conversation to have during this month of February, Black History Month.
And here's what I'm here's one of the things that this is just me. This is Dunlap. I'm hoping and I want to believe that during this month, this is a month where we can focus on these type of things, not putting, and I love the way that everything was not a blame game conversation tonight. There's some things that we have to do as well. When you know certain things have not happened, then that means that there's some things that you may need to do yourself. I'm speaking to a lot of our listeners. So we want to continue the conversation. I would love for us to possibly do a Facebook Live between this week and next week if everybody's in agreement on that, and we can do more than one, because people like to see us sometimes, and we know that that's been quite successful. So and people like to chime in as well. So if we can do something like that, that would be great. But again, thank you, Dr. Gordon. Thank you, Laura, for hosting, allowing me to sit in the background for a couple of weeks. And one more thing, the first and third Friday of every month, we know that our Kimberly Silas host, Your Health is Your Wealth, for February, we're changing it, or she's changed it. So it's going to be on the second and fourth Friday of the month at 2 p.m. But as always, go to our website, prfministry.org, and you'll be able to see everything that's going on with the PRF table. Next week, we have a legacy conference in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Again, go to the website, check us out, and let's continue this conversation on our Facebook page, PRF Institute on Facebook. God bless you. We love y'all. Have a good evening. Peace.
God bless you both.